ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
One of the great mistakes a lot of the political and media class are making at the moment is just presuming that the orthodoxies of politics still apply, and they really don't anymore, and they especially don't apply to One Nation.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find us on ABC Listen.
We know that prohibition never works, but I've spoken to the people in Canada at the time in enforcement who were going under with murders and firebombings, virtually a carbon copy of what we see here. And that the only thing that allowed them to fight on an even keel was that cut in the excise. The criminals will pivot, they'll go online, they'll do home deliveries, the consumers are not going away. So that market is still large, it's entrenched, and they are attracted by the lower price. While the economic incentive for these criminals remains in place, we're going to see the problem continue.
It's become a wicked policy dilemma. The steady increase in tobacco excise over recent years has driven up the price of cigarettes and led to a flourishing black market. Arson attacks and fire bombings have plagued the city and suburbs of Melbourne and Sydney in particular, as criminal gangs fight for control over the lucrative trade. And because so many smokers are buying cheap illegal cigarettes now, excise revenue to the government has plunged over the last 6 years, from more than $16 billion a year to just $4 billion. But is there an easy answer at this point? One Nation this week proposed slashing the excise rate by 75%. The Coalition appears to be preparing a similar policy position. But the government says there's no evidence slashing the excise would work. It says much tougher enforcement is the answer and argues the higher price of cigarettes has achieved a significant fall in smoking rates. So is there any precedent for what Australia is now facing? Has another country faced a similar conundrum? Well, Rowan Pike thinks so. He's a former Australian Federal Police and Australian Border Force officer who founded and led the tobacco strike team at Border Force. And Rowan Pike argues that the excise should be lowered and points to what Canada went through back in the 1990s. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Rowan Pike, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello, David.
So, look, I just want to start. You're a former AFP and Border Force officer, but in the interest of full disclosure, before we get to your views, do you have any links at all to the tobacco or nicotine industry?
I certainly have no contracts with them, but I do speak to them and retailers and a whole range of professionals in order to fully inform myself about this topic.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's get to your example of the Canadian province of Quebec. What happened there back in the 90s?
Well, I heard the gist of this story some time ago, but it was people here in Australia saying that there's absolutely no evidence to support a reduction in excise, which led me to look more closely at it. So I reached out to some former colleagues over in Canada who were in the law enforcement side. I read reports and so on as to what happened in the 1990s, and it turns out it's extremely similar to our situation here, and I thought it was highly relevant, and therefore I wrote about it. But what happened was, again, an excise-led crime wave that they had in the early 90s, where Canada's excise rate was four times that of the USA, which was just over the border. And we're talking particularly in relation to the provinces of Quebec and Ontario. And so the smuggling routes came from very populous areas of the USA across that border. That led, of course, to criminals being invited into the exploiting the vulnerability in that system. That, of course, led to organised crime coming into that system.
Yeah, and there's no dispute that there was smuggling of illegal tobacco going on and a black market emerged. But what actually drove it? There is some argument over this. Was it the rate of excise, or was it the Canadian tobacco manufacturers exporting their cigarettes to the United States, knowing that they would be illegally smuggled back into Canada to be sold on the black market?
Well, I haven't seen that in the reports. And indeed, the government looked at the issue in some depth over a period of years, where, like we are, sick and tired of the violence that erupted over this. And they made the decision that it was excise that was driving it, and therefore they made the bold decision to cut excise.
But there were two big Canadian tobacco manufacturers that ended up reaching a settlement some years later in 2008 after a long-running, years-long police investigation. The criminal fines and civil penalties they copped totaled more than $1 billion. They admitted, and I quote, that aiding persons to sell or be in possession of tobacco products manufactured in between 1989 and 1994. Wouldn't this suggest it was the tobacco industry itself that was, at least in part, driving the illegal trade to try and avoid the excise?
Well, I'm not familiar with the details of that case, and certainly tobacco companies have been caught overproducing product in one jurisdiction, perhaps knowing that some of that product will end up in another jurisdiction.
But so trying to get around an excise, basically, by doing that.
Yes, certainly. But there's no doubt that the rate of excise was four times in Canada as it was in the US.
So there was also a review of all this at the end of the 90s by the Canadian Cancer Society, a bunch of other anti-smoking groups, looking at what happened in Quebec. They found the excise cut wasn't actually the magic bullet. They said the illegal trade was already significantly disrupted before the excise was cut. The US cigarette price had also risen substantially, so that gap wasn't there in the price. They found that tougher enforcement was the answer that fixed this, not really slashing the excise. So what is the evidence that it was cutting the excise that fixed the problem?
Well, this is probably something that a health body would say and have said here in Australia, that enforcement is the only way. Of course, these people are not experts in enforcement. In fact, have no qualifications in it. They are tried and true to their policy, which is based on prohibition. And we know that prohibition never works. But I've spoken to the people in Canada at the time in enforcement who were going under with murders and firebombings, virtually a carbon copy of what we see here. And that the only thing that allowed them to fight on an even keel was that cut in the excise. After that incentive, the economic driver of that of the crime, had been taken away, then the law enforcement was beefed up, and while crime was low, they introduced a number of new teams that were focused on tobacco itself, and that kept it under control.
So, just to be clear, this is based on your conversations, private conversations with law enforcement over there, who reckon it was the excise cut that fixed the problem. The disruption of the black market wasn't already happening before then.
No, they definitely suggest that they were being inundated by organised crime, and it's the excise cut took the fuel out of that market and allowed them to fight back.
The World Bank also looked into this Canadian experience. It produced a report not that long ago in 2019, looking back at all of it. It found that, and I quote, to curb illicit tobacco activity in the 1990s, Canadian governments lowered taxes considerably, resulting in confirmed substantial increases in youth initiation and tobacco consumption. In other words, smoking rates started to pick up. It also found there was then a resurgence in the black market, in the illegal trade of cigarettes in the 2000s, which peaked in about 2008. Do you accept that the illegal trade did later pick up again, even though the excise had been cut?
Yes, you've got to understand that Canada doesn't have a solely federal excise levy. It's not levied by the federal government entirely, solely. So they also have, it's only a quarter of it is actually levelled by the federal government. The other three quarters is levelled by each and every province. So the provinces that were most affected by this crime wave in the early 90s were Quebec and Ontario, and they reduced their excise by the most, by 71% and 66%, respectively. The other provinces who didn't see that they had much of a problem, in certainly over in the west of Canada, they actually didn't drop their excise at all at that time. What happened is that crime increased in the provinces that had the highest excise after that, as, of course, excise did naturally start to go up again. And we would expect that. So even to this day, Quebec has the lowest excise rate in Canada. It has the lowest illicit rate, and in fact, the highest revenue.
Right. And so to this day, Quebec, you believe, is an example of having the low excise rate and much fewer problems with illegal trade.
Yeah, it stands out really like a sore thumb. Quebec's illicit rate is sitting somewhere around 10%, and the rest of the country is 40 to 50%. So what they did in 94-5 by following on, piggybacking off that excise cut, bring in a strict enforcement regime, and they've kept it under control ever since.
And is Quebec the only example here that we can point to? I mean, surely there are other parts of the world that have had a pretty high excise rate. Are there other examples where that's led to these sorts of problems?
Well, yes. In just recently, only 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Maldives halved their tobacco excise rate on the back of being inundated with illicit product. We've had countries that have banned tobacco altogether, like Bhutan. That only lasted 10 years before they were overcome by smuggling, but certainly out of India. And so they've repealed that policy, albeit too late, because smuggling still goes on at a rampant rate in Bhutan. And in fact, this argument is being had in Europe as we speak, where many countries, fearful of an increase in illicit rate, are pushing back against EU directives to increase the price of tobacco.
So what happened in that Maldives example when they cut the excise? Did the problems go away?
It's a bit too early to say because this has only happened 3 weeks ago. But so I've been using the Canadian example because it's the most relevant to Australia. But of course, there aren't many examples in the world. And the reason why there aren't many examples in the world is because Australia has increased its excise rate so quickly and so perhaps I would say irresponsibly, that no other country even comes close to the excise rate that Australia's is.
But do you accept there are some issues around that Quebec example in Canada? If, you know, if it was the tobacco companies who were trying to get around the excise by selling their product to the US across the border, smuggling it, allowing it to be smuggled back in and so on, that there was a bit more to it than what we're experiencing here in Australia right now?
Yes, there may well have been an element to that, but that sort of doesn't explain how they've managed to stay so low for so long, for the next 30 years. So certainly once they'd kicked the criminal element out of Quebec, they brought in the enforcement after that, and the combination of those and the sequence of those has led to their success so far.
Yeah, I want to ask you about enforcement because, you know, a lot of people say, well, why can't, you know, the illegal product just be stopped, or at least more be done to stop it? I mean, there was a federal parliamentary inquiry recently that found less than 1% of shipping containers are physically examined or x-rayed. Surely more checking at the ports would help here, wouldn't it?
Well, the Border Force is actually not designed to stop and search every container that comes in.
Not every container, but more than 1%, you'd think.
Yeah, but in fact, I mean, they check what is an appropriate amount for the resources that they have.
Right.
To do more would involve a massive increase
in
staffing.
They need more resources to do that.
Yes. Well, if we want to check more containers, that's what they would do. Of course, they use, you know, intelligence to try to identify the most highest risk containers coming in, and they do a very good job of that. But in no way is our border designed to stop every illicit good coming through.
No, but bottom line, if the money was spent on the resources for Border Force to do the job, they could check more containers.
They could check more containers, and that might increase the ratio of hits from, say, 25% to 50% on an extremely good day. But criminals would then pivot their activities and perhaps bombard the border with even more product. So hence, you know, getting the same amount through.
Yeah, well, but why are you arguing for both to happen here, the lowering of the excise, but also more resources for Border Force to check containers coming in?
I'm arguing for a coordinated attack on the criminal industry from at all points, from overseas through the border all the way to the retail level. At all points as a supply chain. I think there's an unrealistic expectation on the border force to stop things at the border. For far too long, Australia has disregarded the reality that products do get through, and if they have, it's been open slather for the criminals after the border.
Yeah, and at the retail level, again, a lot of people say, well, you know, why is it more being done to shut down the retailers selling illegal cigarettes? The Victorian Parliament is set to pass shutdown laws in the coming weeks, and that'll give police the power to shut down shops that are caught selling illegal tobacco products. Other states already have these shutdown laws in place. Do you see them as helping those powers?
They are certainly one of the tools in the toolkit of the police agencies to help. Obviously, the criminals are getting their product to the market far too easily through just standard retail shops on the high street. I would warn, though, that criminals will pivot their activities away from what the law enforcement concentrate on. Only today, South Australia are talking about how the shops that they've closed down are now opening up again. So it is a little bit whack-a-mole when we get to that point. Ideally, we reduce the whole cohort of consumers that are, you know, using these products.
Yeah, exactly. But that whack-a-mole concept, you reckon what, retail outlet, a shop gets shut down, and what, they're just reopening and starting to sell illegal tobacco again. Is that what's happening?
Well, that is what's happening in South Australia as of today. But they also see other shops opening up down the street. So you close one and others open. As I say, the criminals will pivot. They'll go online. They'll do home deliveries. The consumers are not going away. So that market is still large. It's entrenched and they are attracted by the lower price.
Mm. So do you have a particular number on where you think excise should be, or how far it should be lowered? One Nation, as I mentioned, is saying a 75% cut. We'll see what the coalition lands on. What do you think?
I haven't got any specific modelling myself. I would suggest it will take a significant cut, and let's just even the market up.
Get the price down to where the black market price is.
Well, it's never going to be that low because the criminals can then still undercut and lower their price even further. Mm. But consumers will pay a premium for the better quality product. They'll pay a premium for the brands that they like. They'll pay a premium to stay within the law. So Australia's, you know, generally law-abiding. Mm. People know that they're breaking it, but most people, I think, with some education and a choice of 2-to-1 preps as opposed to the 4, 5, 6-to-1 that it is at the moment, might go back to the legal market.
Yeah, because we should probably spell out to people who may not know. I think the legal packet of cigarettes at the moment is, what, anywhere between $40 and $65, depending on the brand and, you know, and so on. And the illegal stuff is, what, less than $20 a pack. Is that roughly what's happening at the moment?
Yeah, right. Yes, that's right.
And so the illegal product presumably could go down further, what, to $10 even something like that, a packet if the excise were cut. But what you're saying is that the legal product could still be a little more expensive, but people will pay a little more for the safety of knowing they're buying something legal.
Yeah, and the safety of knowing that it's a quality product that's been quality assured, as opposed to leaving their health in the hands of criminals at the moment as it is. So the criminals don't care what's in it or who they sell it to.
What about the health part of this whole debate? Because the whole reason for hiking excise in the first place was, of course, to drive down smoking rates. The government argues that it has done that. And even just in recent years, I think went down to 5.6% of people over the age of 14 are smoking daily. A few years ago, that was 8.3%. So it has come down. Do you accept that the excise hike has worked to get the smoking rate down, or do you doubt those figures?
I certainly doubt the most recent figure of 5.6 that came out from the AIHW. They've been using the same methodology for the last 20 years, and the circumstances have changed. The environment's changed. So when 20 years ago it was a predominantly legal market, now it's predominantly illegal, but they're using the same methodology to measure it. So I would suggest that what the answers to the questions they've asked using the methodology they used says 5.6. So I completely agree with that, but that doesn't reflect the reality that's happening on the street, and perhaps they need to change the methodology.
So what's wrong with the methodology they're using?
Oh, it's clearly not capturing the criminality that's going on, and people perhaps are lying on these forms, which is not unusual for people to deny that they're involved in illegal activity.
I don't think the forms say whether you're buying legal or illegal cigarettes, do they? It just asks if you're smoking.
No, but perhaps the forms aren't going to the sectors of the community that are smoking the illegal product either. But certainly what we see on the ground is not reflective in those figures. But I'm not arguing that cigarette smoking hasn't reduced over certainly the last 50 years. That's a fantastic thing. And certainly perhaps the raising of the excise was an effective lever to be pulled 10 or 15 years ago. However, we've now used that as our main tool, our one and only tool, really, in order to reduce excise, and it's been pulled too far.
Mm. I look back to the Canadian example. The argument from the anti-smoking groups was that when the excise was cut, they stopped seeing a reduction in smoking rates. There was no longer that disincentive. It was easier for young people in particular to take up smoking. Do you worry that if the excise were cut, we would start to see smoking rates pick up again?
Well, just back on that Canadian example, that's not actually correct. So between 1995 and 2001, smoking rates in Canada dropped 30%. So they were 29% in about 94, 95. They ended up being 21% 6 years later. So despite that cut in excise across the country, the traditional decline in smoking rates, which predominantly have come about through education. People realise they're going to get cancer if they smoke. So that's the thing. That has stopped people from smoking.
Okay, but that fall in Canada did plateau after the excise was cut in 94. The World Bank pointed that out as well, that it was going down very fast and then it pretty much flatlined. I mean, it might have still gone down a little bit, but it was pretty flat reduction.
It may have flatlined for 1 year, but a 30% reduction in 6 years, I wouldn't call that a little bit. I think that's a significant reduction.
Yeah, okay.
And it carried on the long-term trend.
All right. So, bottom line, if Australia were to do what you're suggesting, and that is bring the excise rate down to a point where legal products aren't going to cost much more than the illegal product, you think this would actually change behaviour but still bring down smoking rates?
Well, there's a number of factors that come into bringing down smoking rates, and some of those other levers that have perhaps been neglected in the focus just on the excise rate, they need to come back into play. Education, for one. Enforcement needs to be coordinated and consistent across the country. Currently, every state's doing their own thing, despite several agencies having been created to help the coordination. There's still no national plan that we're following. So the government are throwing money at this, perhaps to absolve themselves of responsibility, but no one's actually has the responsibility to fix the problem. We're talking about disruption. We're talking about some coordinated action. We're going to see more seizures, more arrests. It'll go on and on. While the economic incentive for these criminals remains in place, we're going to see the problem continue.
Yeah, and just on that point about national coordinated enforcement, obviously we have state and territory police services, but are you saying it should be, a national agency like Border Force that does the policing of the retail shop fronts or coordinate the state police services better to do this and resource them better? I mean, what does that look like, that sort of national approach?
Yeah, it looks somewhat different to what we're doing now. So what we're doing now is an ad hoc approach. As I say, we're going to use that to come across numerous examples of huge sieges and so on, and use that as an example of success, whereas the impact of that is very little on the actual ground. But the government needs to come up with a federal body that takes responsibility for this. The states didn't have to deal with this problem 5 years ago, certainly not 10 years ago. They are rightly concerned that they are expending resources that they never had to before. They're being blamed as recently as this week by Minister Plibersek for not doing their jobs properly. I don't think they'll take that criticism terribly well, given they haven't created this problem themselves.
Yeah, the states and the Commonwealth are used to fighting over all sorts of things. But are you saying, what, have the Australian Federal Police or Australian Border Force do the actual on-the-ground policing in our cities?
Well, it's the government that levies the excise on these products, and they simply don't have the means to collect it. So it's very easy for them to continue raising the excise and encouraged by the health department, as they have been. But they've completely ignored the fact that they've got no means of collecting this, and that the criminals have stepped in and exploited that vulnerability in the system.
Mm. So again, would it be the Federal Police or Border Force or an agency like that that goes around policing the retailers?
Well, if the federal government wants to collect the excise, then they should be expending their own resources to collect it properly. And currently, they're not doing that.
Well, it's a fascinating debate, Rowan Pike. I really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for that.
That's okay.
And we'll have more on this on the program on Sunday. Hope you can join us for Insiders. PK, we'll be back in the podcast feed on Monday, and we'll see you again for Insiders on Background at the end of the week. Bye.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.